Welcome to episode 25 of Practical Defense, an interview with Jerry Snook. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I am your host, Alex Addix. This week, we have an interview with Jerry Snook. Now, Jerry's a good friend of mine from Minnesota, and he's actually a broadcaster out there and a fellow podcaster. He does both radio and podcasting. And after listening to episode 24 of Practical Defense, you know, he sent me an email and said, "Hey, Alex, did you realize that I had been robbed in a convenience store?" So I figured it was probably a great tie-in to the previous episode. So this week, we have an interview with Jerry, and he tells us his tale of being robbed at both gunpoint and knife point while working as a convenience store clerk. And here's the interview. Thanks, Jerry, for being on the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show. It's cool to be here.
Now, before we get into the stories here, you actually have your own podcast.
Yep, I do. I do a podcast on an online video game, an MMORPG called Dungeons & Dragons Online. The podcast I do is called DDLcast. Website is ddlcast.com. And you're on it, actually, Alex, to do a little bit of segment work for us. We have... just a bunch of little topics on everything from characters to quests to, you know, tips and advice, things like that. It's kind of about the culture of the MMO as much as it is also about what's going on in the game. So it's like kind of news and events and emails and just a whole bunch of stuff. So,
yeah, I actually really like being a part of your show. Now, just for those out there, an MMO is a massive multiplayer online game, and so it's a very large-scale game that a lot of people get together and play simultaneously.
Yeah, if you're not into video games at all, you've heard of a game called World of Warcraft. That's probably the biggest MMO. Dungeons & Dragons is similar in some ways to that, but I really like this one a lot myself in terms of, well, nothing against World of Warcraft, but Dungeons & Dragons Online is a great game, but it's kind of similar if you've heard of, you know, World of Warcraft or EverQuest, sort of in the same genre there.
Also, you sound very polished on the radio, and that's because you're actually a broadcaster as well, in addition to the podcast.
Yeah, I've been working in radio and other related fields for pretty much since I was a teenager.
Wow, that long. What were you doing as a teenager?
Well, I got my start actually hosting, running the boards, basically making sure the commercials went off on time and doing a few sponsorships for the Minnesota Twins syndicated satellite games on a little station in Waseca, Minnesota called KRUE-FM 92.1. And that was in probably the early 90s. So that's where I got my start. And I just kind of haven't been doing it consistently. Also, you know, went off to college for a while on that, but I've always kind of had a job in that sort of related field, if nothing else.
And podcasting is the natural progression of radio, from what I understand as well.
Yeah. Well, you don't get paid for it, but...
Well, some people are. I mean, I guess if you're Leo Laporte, you get paid for it, but the rest of us are just kind of schlepping along.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It's a great time. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's sort of like talk radio for whatever topic you want it to be. I mean... the nice thing about the internet is there may be only a couple of people in your town with the same interests as you, but if you go worldwide, there's enough to talk about just about anything, so, and have a group coalesce around it.
Yeah, well, we definitely appreciate you being on our show to talk about our topics this time, and also appreciate your experiences.
Yeah, thanks. So basically, I mean, you know, why am I on your show? We were talking just kind of between us on a DDLcast related matter, and I mentioned that I myself have been robbed. I was a victim of armed robbery twice. This both instances happened 5 weeks apart, and this was back when I was in college. So this would have been in the mid-1990s in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was working at a convenience store at the time, and yeah, first day on the job, got robbed by two guys with guns. Second robbery, which was, like I said, 5 weeks later, was a guy wearing a ghoul mask and a knife. And not a lot of fun there. But since we're talking about kind of security and things, I guess we thought maybe it might be a good story to tell.
Oh, absolutely. And it actually came up because you actually listened to last week's episode when we talked about armed robberies and how to survive a criminal attack.
Now, yeah, and the horrible incident in California.
Oh, yes.
It is scary. I mean, it's kind of hard to describe sort of what it feels like. I'll be honest. I mean, the first time actually I got robbed, I was just working the cash register and two guys had guns pointed at me and just said, you know, hands up. Boom, okay. They grabbed the cash and ran.
Well, yeah. Let's take it a little slower.
Okay.
What time of day was it? And you said this was your first day, you said. This is first day on the job.
Yep. The first robbery was my first day on that job. Although I had been a convenience store clerk prior to that. So at a different convenience store.
Okay. So what time of day was it?
Nighttime.
Nighttime?
Both instances were quite late at night. I couldn't tell you the exact time, but sometime between maybe 9 p.m. and midnight.
How did they come into the store? Was there a lot of people in the store? Was it empty? Were they already in there and all of a sudden you turned your back and then you turned back around and you had a gun in your face? How did it actually start?
Yeah, a little mix of that. The store was empty. They came in actually wearing sort of ski masks.
Oh, so they just kind of burst in the door with guns a-blazing?
No. This was Minnesota. This was the middle of winter. So it's not uncommon to see people who have to walk to convenience stores, you know, sometimes wearing, you know, heavy coats and heavy hats and all that sort of thing. So I really didn't think too much about it. They basically just kind of popped in. It did happen pretty quick, though. They popped in. They kind of went back around a corner just slightly away from the register where technically I couldn't see them other than through the use of a mirror. And they just basically came back then, pulled their guns out, came back then, and pointed it at me and the person who was training me. This was my first day, of course. We basically put our hands up, and that was that. It's called a dash and run, I think, is maybe what they call in the police terminology. They, you know, open the drawer, they just reached in, grabbed a big old stack of whatever bills they felt they could get away with, and just bolted out the door. Really, probably the entire process, I mean, it felt like a much longer time when you're actually experiencing it, but I bet it didn't take even a minute, you know, start to finish.
Now, what did they say to you? Did they actually say anything?
What happened is they went around the corner, and I believe they actually put like a bag of chips on the counter, and I went to basically, I think I just went to ring it up. It's hard to say now. I can't remember all the details because, you know, you do so many transactions in a day, right, as a convenience store clerk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll do 1,000 of them. And so after a while, sometimes you kind of forget, you know, the details run together. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, boom, you're looking up and there's a gun in my face. And that's basically what it was. I can't quite remember exactly how I got to that point. All I remember is the next thing the guy had actually said to me, look up. And I looked up and there was the gun in my face because I had been looking down at the cash register at the time.
So he actually had to get your attention and said, look up so they could see the gun?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would have noticed it obviously within a second or two, but I think he wanted, you know, it had just, like, he went up to the counter. I looked down at the register. He must have just at that moment pulled out the gun and said, hey, look up. And I looked up and there we are.
Wow.
I had never stared into the barrel of a gun before.
I can only imagine how terrifying that would have been.
It was, particularly in hindsight, it was. You know, it happened so fast that at the time, I didn't even really, I mean, it didn't kind of register. You just sort of, it didn't really process, to be honest with you, until maybe about 10, 20 minutes afterwards. And then I started to be like, man, you know, I really could have died there, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they could have just easily have just shot you and taken the money rather than make you get out of the way.
Yeah,
those things, all those situations are so volatile, and you never know what's going to happen to them.
No, you don't. Like I said, in this instance, it happened so quick. It was, you know, look up, boom, there's the gun. I hit a button to open up the drawer. They grabbed the cash, bolted out the door, and that was that. So literally the process happened so quick, I barely even had a time to register it.
Now, did they yell at you, or seem very calm? Were they slurring their words? Did they seem drunk or intoxicated? Or could you even tell?
No, I couldn't really tell because of the fact they were all wearing heavy winter coats and, you know, had on masks. But I got the distinct impression that they made an effort to say as little as possible. You know, look up. I was really about the only thing I remember hearing from them from the time they entered the store, you know, to the time they robbed us to bolt out. I think that may have been the only thing they said. I bet there was a deliberate thing.
How long before the police arrived?
It was pretty quick. It was maybe 10, 15 minutes. But that was, you know, a situation where they had already taken off. So,
oh, right, right.
The police knew full well that they weren't going to be catching any robbers that night.
Now, did you lock the store after they left, or did you just leave it open?
In that particular instance, I believe we left it open because there was two of us there. You know, I was being trained at the time, and the police basically arrived fairly shortly. Yeah. I think we did leave it open in both cases, actually.
Did you have a panic button, or did you actually have to pick up the phone and call 911?
There was a mix of both. Actually, there was a panic button kind of underneath the cash register, and that's what I ended up pushing. But then, you know, this wasn't the best convenience store in the world, so I wasn't 100% positive that it actually functioned, and so I did follow up with a phone call quite soon afterwards.
Okay, lots of we could
get into that a little bit maybe later on in this conversation as well, in terms of advice for the future convenience store employee. You know, some things to look at. You know, maybe you should find a different place to work. But at the time, you know, I was a college kid. I was broke. It was right near my house. It seemed fine. but in hindsight, that was kind of a bad place to work, to be honest with you.
I mean, why did you even stay? Well, actually, before we get into that, let's talk about the police interaction. How did the police treat you when they arrived?
Good, good. They went in, took a lay of the land. I think one of the officers went out around the perimeter to look for evidence. You know, sometimes they might maybe, you know, drop a mask or drop the gun itself or whatever, you know, and didn't find anything. While the other person basically just took down the basic information. They had a notepad. They asked, you know, when did this happen? What did you see? What did they look like? You know, kind of real immediate reaction. I believe within a few days afterwards, they did follow up with me as well. I was working a couple of jobs at the time. And I was working a restaurant job, and they came back into the kitchen a couple of days later with a couple more follow-up questions on the description. Basically, they asked, I think, if anything had jogged in my memory since the first time around. And they showed me some mug shots, although since I hadn't, you know, they were wearing masks, I had no idea. You know, I frankly had to tell the officer that. So, and that was the only interaction I saw. I bet they had some more with the manager of the place, but... In terms of me as a counter jockey, that's the only experience I had.
Did they collect any of the videotapes, or was the place even videotaped?
I'm not 100% sure on this. I believe it depends on who you ask. Most people and who work there and myself at the time were of the impression that there was a camera there, but it wasn't working. And the convenience store manager claimed that it was working, and he gave it to the police. But when I... And the police never specifically said that they didn't have video footage, but they basically said, well, we really have no evidence to go on. And they did collect the tape. But like I said, I don't think that tape even worked, honestly, because the manager was too cheap to want to pay for upkeep on it.
Okay.
So he installed it more as a visual deterrent than something that actually worked, which I bet is an unfortunate reality in some places.
So after your first day... You're still in training with a guy, you know, the person who's training you, and you get robbed on that first day.
Yep.
Why did you stay?
Because I was an idiot. Now, I don't know. You know, honestly, at the time, I seem to recall telling my girlfriend at the time, well, this is my time that I've been robbed, you know. It's probably only going to happen to me once, and I'm sure it'll never happen again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, the answer is I was an idiot, and I needed the money, and I didn't think it was going to happen again. I figured, you know, since I'd worked at a convenience store prior to that one for about a year and a half with no incidents, I guess I figured, well, you know, what's the chances of being robbed more than once, you know? Little did I know that I suspect, we could talk a little bit about this later as well, that the convenience store was a known target for people who were into that kind of criminal activity.
Yeah, we used to have a place like that outside one of the local colleges here. It was a stop-and-go restaurant. A stop and mm-hmm. go quickie mart type place. We used to call it Stop and Stab.
Yeah.
It was right off the freeway, right next to the college, high traffic area. And yeah, it was every Friday night. You can guarantee if you drove by in the late evening, there were always squad cars with the lights flaring and because something had happened. Either, you know, somebody had been shot, they'd been stabbed, there had been a fight in the parking lot, or the place had been robbed. It was one of those things on a Friday and Saturday night at this place. So we always just called it Stop and Stab.
Yeah, I bet especially in convenience stores that have a history in an area, you know, people, there's the criminal element, I suspect, will get to know which ones they can probably get away with. And there are some places that they just don't do enough for security, or maybe they're in a bad location. In this particular instance, I was by campus. It was open at night, and it was by an interstate as well. And so they could essentially rob it and get off on the interstate fairly quickly, which I suspect, you know, was one of the reasons that it got hit as many times as it did.
That's actually one of the things that the police do is after a major robbery or even a bank robbery, the first thing they do is they hit the freeways and they look for speeders. And then they follow the speeders. And if they match the description of the getaway vehicle, then they pull them over and call for backup. But that's one of the things that police do is like a couple of people, police will go to the scene and then a bunch will jump on the major highways and look for people and look for the cars and look for speeders because of people trying to get as far away from the scene of the crime as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
There's actually a thoroughfare here down by the Los Angeles airport, down by LAX, and they call it the criminal highway because the way that the freeway runs, it runs from a very bad neighborhood in a straight line. I mean, you could put a ruler to this right into a good neighborhood. And so the criminals just use this as a thoroughfare to come from the bad neighborhoods to rob the good neighborhoods and then go back home.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, this was by college. So there was a lot of, you know, a lot of foot traffic, you know, a lot of college kids buying chips and three, two beer. So they probably knew there was a, you know, pretty fast turnaround. Plus it was by the interstate. Plus it was obviously not very well kept up. And it was,
high cash business.
High cash. Although, you know, even in that first day, in both of the robberies that I was, party to, being the victim there, in neither case do I think that they got away with more than maybe $40-$50. Especially toward a night shift. One of the things that they always tell you as an employee is do not keep more than X amount of money in the cash register, because even someone who maybe is not necessarily interested in, you know, who might have criminal tendencies will maybe see a cash register full of money and then come back a little bit later. So it's always a good idea to keep as little in the register as possible, particularly at night.
Wow, 40.
Which is also
bucks.
Why we don't take those, which is also why we, you know, most convenience stores won't cash that $100 bill of yours.
Yeah, no kidding. But I mean, 40 or $50, that is not worth a jail sentence.
Well, and I was only getting paid $4.65 an hour, so it wasn't worth my life as well, you know? I mean,
oh boy.
Let's be honest here. In both situations, it was like this whole thing was ridiculous. But I bet that, you know, I bet that's fairly common. You know, a lot of these kind of, a lot of people who are going to rob convenience stores probably are doing it for drugs or quick cash. And so I don't think they're probably looking for, I mean, I'm sure they'd love it if they had, you know, came out with a couple $100, but you know, I know in most of the convenience stores I worked at, and this was, again, in the mid-90s, so I don't know how things have changed since then, but there were big, you know, signs to employees, do not keep more than $75 in the cash register. And so they wouldn't have if they were, you know, paying attention.
Interesting. Because when I was working my way through school, I worked at a large software retailer, and that was my experience in retail, and it was bad. I actually got attacked when I was working the cash register, too, one time. But we would, at the end of the day, we would have, you know, $10,000 in checks and credit card transactions, and we'd have $2,000 to $3,000 in cash between the two registers at the end of the day.
Hmm. Well, there was a drop box, a drop safe. You take the, you only keep maybe one, maybe tops $220s in the drawer. The rest of it you ball up and put in these little tubes and shove it down to the safe. And you have no access to the safe. The only person that does is the manager. And that's, you'll often see that, you know, on the sign on the front door, there'll be a little sign saying the only person who has access to the safe is the manager. Well, that's true. You know,
yeah, as long as they read, as long as they believe it.
Yeah. And so if you keep consistent with it, you know, you'll, whenever you get, say, above $75-$80 or whatever, you have more than a couple 20s in the till, you know, I would take that and roll it up, put it in the tube, stick it in the drawer so that you'd kind of keep, you know, keep the visible cash to a minimum.
So let's talk about your second incident. The second one you said was a knife, and they actually held the knife to your throat?
Yeah, it was this was a lone guy rather than two guys. And this was 5 weeks later. It was still cold. The person came in. I remember wearing some kind of long winter coat. Can't remember what it looked like now. Like a ghoul mask. You know, kind of one of those ones where it has like grayish hair kind of frizzied out all over the place and sort of a greenish ghoul-looking face type structure.
Yeah.
And carrying a knife. It was a one-handed knife, probably a foot-long blade. And basically, this guy didn't even bother going behind the counter or going up, you know, into the store. He went straight in through the front door behind the counter where I was, stuck it to my throat. And I can't remember exactly what he said. I don't even know if he said anything. I don't know if he had to say anything. I mean, frankly, you got a guy with a knife to your throat and a ghoul mask. You suspect he's not there for a money order, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have a pack of lifesavers. We can laugh about it now.
Yeah, exactly. At that instance, I seem to remember he just put it to my throat. I opened up the drawer again. He grabbed a bunch of cash and ran out. I think that's really all there was in that case, too. I don't think there was anything else. We did have a bag of checks as well, and I don't know if he took – I can't remember now if he took off with that or not. For some reason, I'm thinking maybe he did, but I can't remember. I'm thinking maybe it was a bag of cash.
Now, how did the police treat that one any differently when they actually learned that the guy had actually made physical contact with you and drew a knife on you?
No, unfortunately. That night was – I became fairly angry at both at the manager. I got robbed, right? So I called the police. They arrived within a few minutes in that case. I came within five, I'm sure it was. And one of the officers did a perimeter search and actually found the ghoul mask because he came in and said, "Hey, is this it?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's it."
Oh, wow.
And the other person just took down my information and then I called the manager, and the manager was like, "Okay, you need to finish out your shift." Now, this was the second time being robbed in 5 weeks, right?
Yeah.
I was not about to finish out my shift for that stupid jerk paying me $4.65 an hour putting my life on the line, you know? And I was a college kid, too, so I basically, you know, had a choice word for him and said he needed to somehow find a way back into his establishment quickly. And then when he did, the cops actually wanted to talk to him as well, which is actually maybe I think part of the reason why he didn't want to come in quickly, because the guy was, you know, the store was known by police officers as well as being quite robbed frequently. And I think they wanted to ask him about the cameras, which, like I said, never quite got a straight answer, but most of the employees believe he didn't have turned on. And that same night, I basically said, "You know what? I'm not only not finishing out my shift tonight, but I'm not coming back. See ya." And that was the end of it, so.
Probably a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. That second time especially, that one was scarier. You know, the first one with the guys with the guns, there was two of them. They were quick, they were quiet, they were obviously organized, and they were out of there. You know, I felt almost like it was more of a professional operation, if you can even call a criminal activity like that professional. I mean, to the extent that I didn't feel as threatened, I guess. But the second time around, maybe it was just the addition of the mask and the use of the knife rather than guns, but it really shook me up quite a bit more.
Now, when he put the knife to your throat, did he actually draw blood?
No. It wasn't really. I think it was just kind of, it was like he lifted it up and it was probably a couple inches from my throat, you know.
Okay.
But it was basically like a threatening thing. You know, he was behind the counter. I had no way to get out. So, I mean, plus, you know, I'm kind of a wimpy guy here. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to, like, you know, use my self-defense moves because I didn't have any. I don't know any. You know, I probably, if I had been a little smarter, I might have been able to tackle the guy. But at the same time, $4.65 an hour isn't worth your life, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
At that point, it was like, take the stinking money, just leave me alone, you know?
Exactly. And that's probably maybe one of the reasons why he did leave you alone, is he complied. And that was one of the things we talked about last episode, was comply until they give you a reason not to comply anymore. So you don't want to agitate them. You don't want to give them an excuse to get violent with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember one of the detectives who did respond to the scene. Actually, I'm not even sure if they were official detectives or if they were just patrol officers. They were probably just patrol officers. But I remember one of the officers had said that. He was like, you know, "Hey, if this ever happens to you again, just make sure that you don't provoke them, don't insult them, you know, really just sit there, open up the drawer, stand back, let them take the money, and, you know, hopefully get out of there safely.
Well, thankfully you did.
Yes, exactly. I'm very glad I did. Yeah, that was not the best time of my life there, that 5-week period working at that stinking gas station at night. And there was a whole bunch of things that really, in hindsight, it was ridiculous that I was even put in that position. I mean, I'm not a litigious person, but I bet nowadays, I don't know if you could get away with that. I mean, I know it was only, a little over a decade ago, but I kind of have to wonder whether or not, you know, people would be able to you know, put their employees through that. For one, I was the only one working that second time. And in most convenience stores that I had been a part of, you know, prior in that, a lot of times for the overnight shift, they'll have two employees working, or at least some employee working in the front, maybe one working in the back. And there's a reason for that. You know, it's one person covering a large property like that does make you pretty vulnerable. And this guy was cheap, really, really cheap, the person who owned this store. And I frankly don't think he cared about his employees or about the quality of his store. I think he just got enough, you know, foot traffic from the college industry that he was basically chalked up those robberies as temporary losses, because I bet in the long run he made a profit, you know?
Well, if they're only walking out with $40 a hit, then sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was a pretty bad deal in hindsight there. I'm really glad I got out of it. But, yeah, you know, I would, if I was to try to work at a convenience store again, I would make sure, maybe even during the interview, just I would ask, have you been robbed a lot, you know? Or how do you have cameras for me? You know, what can I do to feel safe, you know? Things of that nature. Probably not a bad idea to you know, ask that a little bit of the interview process. I myself would never work solo again at night. I did it in both jobs, actually, for a while. One, I worked from like 11 at night to 7 in the morning by myself at a convenience store. I don't think I could ever do that again. I've smartened up since then.
Wow.
It just not worth it, you know?
I'm surprised they actually had enough traffic in order to put an employee in there.
Well, that's the thing. That's the reason there's sometimes there's only one. You don't have a lot of traffic, but you do have a lot of stocking to do. So the person will be, you know, sweeping and mopping and cleaning the bathrooms and stocking the shelves and, you know, in some cases, dealing with magazine turnovers and newspaper turnovers. You know, you've got to bring back the old ones and pick up the new ones. And there's just, you know, a lot of work that actually goes kind of behind the scenes in running a place like that. And a lot of that gets shoved to the overnight shift just due to the fact that the stores tend to be fairly busy during the day.
I didn't never even considered that.
Yeah, well, watch the movie Clerks, Kevin Smith. There's that scene where he gets ready for the morning, and that's actually a pretty accurate scene there.
I've been meaning to watch that. It's one of those classic shows that I've never had a chance to watch.
Yeah. So, again, I think this is somewhat different, too. I bet if you work for one of the big gas station chains, they probably have a little bit more going on in terms of kind of security and safety than a store owned by a bit of a slumlord by a college campus, you know?
Yeah, well, the larger the company, they're probably the more liability as well.
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, out here in Los Angeles, it's very rare to see a convenience store without some sort of protective glass.
Yeah, that's true. I think you see that more often now, too, but not in these places.
But when I travel, I see them all the time. I see these gas stations that are major intersections on the highways and the freeways here. But, you know, there are 20 or 30 patrons in there and like 6 or 7 people working the register, and it's at all times of the day. Those places have to be making just an incredible amount of money.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, like your average, you know, big interstate truck stop, gas station. Yeah, that's not what you have to worry about. I mean, this was by the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities. And there was a number of stores set up really just for groceries and money orders and like the biggies, beer and smokes, you know. Yeah, people would walk to literally by the hundreds. I mean, we'd have, I seem to remember sometimes, you know, 1,000 or 2 customers throughout the course of a day looking at the receipt logs. But, you know, it was sort of a different setup than I think your average vehicle-based gas station. And certainly, you know, despite the fact that the Twin Cities is a big city, it's no L.A., you know.
Yeah, with also the weather conditions also probably have an effect.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, you tended to see more people wearing, you know, heavy coats and heavy snow masks. Sometimes not face-covered ones, of course, but still big hats and things like that. Because, it gets 40 below zero. If you got to walk a couple of blocks to the, you know, okay, maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it's more 10 below zero. But still, you got to walk a couple of blocks in 10 below zero weather in February.
Yeah,
10 below. You need to bundle up, you know?
10 below Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So what is that, like 20 or 30 Celsius or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, we have a lot of international folks, so I try and translate sometimes.
Oh, it feels like the Ice Age.
That's pretty adequate. Yeah, because here in California, we don't have masks like that except for motorcyclists. Now, when a motorcycle rider comes in to buy a pack of cigarettes or whatever it is, and he doesn't take his helmet off, that always makes me nervous. And and I look around, and it makes everyone else in the store nervous as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because you can't see the face.
I think in general, it did make me nervous when people would come in, especially after the robbery. You start paying attention to that stuff. It is. But, at the same time, a lot of times people they'd have a heavy coat on, big scarf, big hat, They'd basically be covered up. Glasses would be all steamed up from walking indoors, from being outside in the cold. And they'd just be like, yeah, box of, Camel Lights or whatever, and boom, 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 and they're out in 15 seconds. So it wasn't uncommon to see people pretty bundled up like that. Maybe in hindsight, if I had been a little bit smarter, I would have noticed these guys going back behind the store and become a bit more concerned earlier. But like I said, I was fairly naive at the time.
And it was your first night.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you consider something like that on your first night? It's like, of all nights, why am I going to get hit on my first night?
Yeah. I guess, if I was to just give a couple of final thoughts here, one thing is, just story-wise, for those who might be curious, as far as I know, in no case were the people arrested. In both cases, the detectives who got back in touch with me later and said, hey, if we do catch these guys, you're going to need to testify, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, fine. Never heard anything back in either case. And so don't know exactly what the deal was with that. As far as I know, the gas station, or not the gas station, the convenience store, maybe I should mention that, actually. This did not sell gas. This was a convenience store only. They didn't have gas pumps. So, still around.
Wow.
It's still at the same location, owned by the same guy. Still employing college students. Maybe they're not making $4.65 an hour. Maybe they are making $5.25 now. But
probably whatever.
Otherwise, I bet it's pretty much the same, to be honest with
you. The new federal minimum. And actually, you're still in Minnesota then.
I am. Southern Minnesota, though.
Southern.
Different part of the state. Yeah.
The warmer side?
Yeah, the tropical part is what we'd like to call it.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate the time that you spent with us and sharing your stories.
Yeah, I love the podcast there, Alex, and it's great to be on your show. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Well, thanks again, and maybe we'll have you on again.
Sure thing.
Well, thanks again, Jerry, for being on the show. In fact, it's kind of nice having you on my show for a change. And again, you can find Jerry's podcast, DDOcast, at ddocast.com, and it's a great weekly podcast on the Dungeons & Dragons massive multiplayer online game. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com, and if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.